Welcome, everyone. You guys are really going to enjoy this one. If you have ever wanted to get into real estate, but talked yourself out of it, thinking you didn't have enough money and or experience, then wait until you hear what Ronnie has to say. We have Ronnie Phillip on the show today, and Ronnie is going to talk to us about how he dropped out of college at the age of 21 to pursue a career in real estate. He then took massive action, developed key relationships, and closed on over $40 million in real estate.
Welcome to Darren Batchelder's Real Estate Investing Show. Each week, you will learn how to grow your wealth through real estate investing, be introduced to the players that are getting it done, and learn how you can get involved. And now, here's your host, Darren Batchelder.
A little background on Ronnie Phillip before we start the show. Ronnie is in his 20s and has purchased over $40 million in real estate. His first deal as a general partner was a 215-unit multifamily community. Ronnie has extremely high goals for himself and is looking to grow his assets under management to over $1 billion by the time he is in his mid-30s. Now, on to the show. Hi, everyone. Darren Batchelder here. I've got Ronnie here with me. Ronnie, welcome to the show.
Darren, thanks so much for having me. I'm excited.
Absolutely. So, Ronnie, I'm excited to have Ronnie on because I talk to a lot of people that reach out to me on Instagram that are younger people in their 20s or early 30s, and they're trying to figure out a way how to get started in this business. And Ronnie is in his 20s, and I want to pass it off to him and just have him share, you know, how did you get into the business at such a young age?
Yeah, I think it's been quite a journey. So give you a little bit about my background. So I started in real estate when I was 21. I was going to college to become a pharmacist. I was like three classes away from applying to pharmacy school.
That's crazy.
And then I was working at a major retail pharmacy, and the interns that were there weren't able to like land full-time jobs. So, you know, I was just doing some math there. So in 5 years from now, when I graduate pharmacy school, will there be jobs available? And I just didn't feel like there would. Right. And God's given me the gift of foresight. And what I predicted was exactly right. A lot of my friends who are graduating pharmacy school aren't able to find jobs, so which is really, really sad. So I ended up dropping out of college and getting my real estate license. I started off as an agent. And
On the residential side?
Yeah, a residential real estate agent. And started helping people buy and sell homes. And I thought my path was, you know, to be like the next Ryan Serhant or Josh Altman or, you know, one of those, right?
Right.
And I realized quickly when I got into the business that that business is not really scalable if you are building a residential real estate team at a brokerage. And the reason I have found this out is I joined a mastermind, and a few of the guys in the business ended up selling their teams, and they'll sell it anywhere between 80 to 120,000, something they built for 6 years.
Oh, wow.
And they're doing, you know, like, I would say around 80 to 100 transactions a year, which is like, that puts you in the top 1%. So I was like, yeah, that's not going to pay off long term. So I realized that quickly. And then honestly, I didn't really like being a residential agent. It was just a lot of stress. And then I got into flipping houses, you know, so started doing that with my dad, and which was fun, you know, learned a lot on the construction side. And I would find the deal, he would buy it, and I'd pretty much do everything else, list it, construction management, all that. And it was a lot of fun. And then I realized that business wasn't scalable, and it wasn't a business I wanted to scale because you had to do a bunch of transactions. So,
right. Now, did your dad, was he already in that business, the fix and flip business, or did you kind of bring him along as the money guy, and but you were the... you know, had to learn from scratch?
Yeah. So, I mean, he's done a few, but I really helped him scale and help him underwrite and all that kind of stuff. So he has rentals and all that kind of stuff. And I realized how much of a headache owning single family rentals is, because I'm the guy going to, you know, the house or the fourplex or whatever at 7 o'clock on a Sunday to fix the garbage disposal.
Right. You
know, the handyman. So I realized that business is something I didn't want to be involved in, and it wasn't scalable. So end of 2016, I started to rethink. I was in a mastermind, which I just dropped like 12 grand on, and I wasn't seeing the path long term, and it really bothered me. And then I went to that mastermind again. It was like they meet like twice a year, and we're in San Diego, and they're like, "So what do you want to do?" I said, "Apartments." And this was like, I'd say end of April, that last weekend of April in San Diego, and I was just sitting on the balcony, gorgeous view, and I was just like, "They're like, what do you want to do?" I was like, "Well, I don't want to be in residential anymore." It's like, "So what's the thought?" It's like, "Well, I want to do commercial real estate," and that's what I initially wanted to get into back in 2015 when I started, but I joined a large residential firm, which they're great, but they have no experience in commercial real estate. So then in June, I started Kingly Acquisitions, and I was like, okay, I'm going to finish out this year with the residential stuff, and then I'm going to go all in. So end of 2017, you know, I started to wind down the residential business and, you know, doing all the different things, right? Going to meetups, going to conferences, going to everything like that, reading books, listening to podcasts. And
what were other people telling you? Because here you are in your 20s. I'm sure you haven't amassed a lot of capital at that point. And now you're trying to make the jump into, you know, large scale multifamily. You know, you made the decision to go after it, but I have to imagine there's people around you that are telling you that you're a little bit crazy.
Oh yeah. People told me that I would never buy an apartment building and all that kind of stuff. There's always going to be negativity and stuff like that.
That's one of the things I really love about you and your story is that, you know, you have an extremely positive mindset. And you don't let the doubters and that negativity prevent you from moving forward to accomplish your goals and your dreams.
Yeah, for sure. I think, you know, being positive and being strong in faith is really important. One of the things I learned is whenever people doubt you, they're probably doubting a part of themselves that want to do exactly what you're doing. Right.
That's a great point.
They've given up on their dream. Right. So it's just really limiting beliefs. So I never take what most people call negativity personal. You know, it's just their limiting beliefs.
Right.
So, yeah, it was a challenge getting started. Right. I think being a principal, like being a GP, general partner in your 20s is really hard. It's not like, you know, us guys have, you know, a million liquid and we had corporate jobs and a wife that has a salary and, you know, just different things like that. Right. There's a lot of more hurdles. But I do think it is definitely possible.
Well, you've shown it's possible for sure. And we haven't had this conversation before, but I am guessing, and you tell me if I'm right or wrong, but I am guessing that part of your hustle factor and part of your success really stems from the fact that you were so committed and that you really put yourself out there and you went to pretty much every marketing networking event you could, and you just surrounded yourself with like-minded people and surrounded yourself with other successful syndicators that you were able to form relationships with and you know, leverage the knowledge base that they have. Because I got to tell you, almost every networking event that I've been to, you're there and you know everybody. So, you know, I applaud you for that. But, you know, share with us if I'm right or I'm wrong, or it was something else that kind of helped you break through that success barrier.
I think, yeah. So one thing is, like, if people want to, like, take you seriously, like, especially experienced sponsors, you have to show them that you're fully committed. And what do I mean by that? So one of my friends, James Kandasamy, he's with Achieve Investment Group. I think he's done well over 100 million in transactions as a principal, fully vertically integrated. So I met him at a conference in January of 2018. And that's also where I met my co-GP partners, Ben and Ferris with Disrupt Equity. So that conference was like kind of like the spark to my multifamily career.
Fantastic. But you had to invest your time and your money to go there.
Yeah, exactly. So I ended up going to that conference, met Ben and Ferris, which they're incredible people. I'll definitely share how that whole thing happened and whatnot. But I met James and he posted in some Facebook group. He's like, "Hey, I'm doing due diligence on an apartment complex in San Antonio. Does anyone want to learn?" And this was like probably, I think it was like a Saturday night. Sunday, I was there and I did due diligence. So helped him with due diligence walks. And then I started doing that for him and then other sponsors and obviously my own deals. And I really learned that process in detail, lease auditing, unit walks, all that kind of stuff. So that helped me a lot.
So now you start building the relationships with James, with Ben, with Ferris. And at what point, how do you figure out what value you could bring to them? You know, they're obviously already have success, have already done deals. You know, you're starting to build relationships, but what value do you see adding to that mix?
Yeah, so I guess we can go over the list of what is the value in general partnerships. Like, what are the common skill sets? There's net worth, there's liquidity, there's track record, there's raising equity, there's due diligence, property management, asset management, construction management. So those are some of the many skill sets, right?
Right.
Where I think I fit in best is raising equity, due diligence, and construction management. Those are the things I feel like I'm really good at. And also marketing, obviously. I think the reason why people started to know me more is because I started hosting my own show, which one was the Ronnie Phillips Show, where I interview like business leaders, people who I find inspiring. Then I had another show called the Commercial Cashflow Show, where I only interviewed commercial real estate people. So it's being a thought leader, and that's how you can put yourself out there. And that's why I think it's easier to build relationships when you're known. So definitely had a good engaging online presence. That definitely helped. But that's kind of how it was, and staying in touch with these guys.
Right.
The reason I was able to do my first deal was because one person reached out and said, "Hey, we have an opportunity in Atlanta we're about to put under contract. You want to be on the GP team?" We kind of talked about it. Eli.
That's pretty impressive that you got the call.
Yeah, it was crazy. He messaged me, Elijah Vo. He messaged me on Facebook. It was November 13th, 2018. And 2018 was probably the roughest year of my life. So whenever he messaged me, I was like, "Okay, so what do you want me to do?" Like, and then we kind of talked about it and whatnot. And ended up putting two deals under contract in December of 2018. And then, you know, did one, you know, we closed it, then did another one and closed it. So back to back, for my first deal was 212 units. It was in Atlanta. And then a few weeks later closed on the second deal, and that was 152 units. So
that's crazy. So you went from basically owning no real estate. You're in your 20s, drop out of college, and you do residential real estate, decide to get into big multifamily. And the first two deals you do, 212 units and 152 units.
Yeah, which is crazy, right?
It's crazy.
But I think you have to find the right partners. So Ben Suttles and Ferris Musa, they're with the Disrupt Equity. So they're my co-GP partners. I mean, these guys are so sharp. probably one of the most on point people I've met. Like, they're just really, really awesome. And I learned a lot by, you know, being a co-GP with them, and they've definitely helped me grow significantly. It's been an awesome experience, and just learning from different people. There's like, I like a short list of people I would partner with, and they're one of those guys.
That's fantastic. Let's go back a little bit. How did you grow up? Did you grow up in the North Dallas area? Did you grow up, you know, wealthy, middle class? You know, what were your parents like? Did they, you know, were they entrepreneurs? Did they kind of instill that in you, or did you kind of find your own way?
Yeah. So, grew up here in Dallas. I wouldn't say we were super wealthy, but we weren't struggling.
Right.
So I guess you could say, you know, my parents definitely worked hard. They came from India to America in their 20s and, you know, took a chance on themselves. And grew up and went to elementary school, went to a private Christian school, then went to public school, then went to a charter school, then back to public school, and then being in college.
Bounced around.
Yeah. So my parents are entrepreneurs. They're in the healthcare business, and learned a lot from them. One thing I learned about the healthcare business, it's great. Especially I learned, you know, during this whole COVID crisis that healthcare is always needed, right? But then I realized so are apartments. That's where people are quarantined. So I think those businesses are great, but there's just a lot of red tape in healthcare. So I didn't really like it. I mean, I worked, you know, at their company and learned a lot, but real estate was always more interesting to me. So that's kind of my background and how I grew up.
What about you? You mentioned your parents, you know, came to the U.S. from India. You know, I recently read the book by Sam Zell, you know, Billionaire Real Estate. And I think it's called Am I Being Too Subtle? And his parents also were immigrants to the U.S. and really instilled values, were hardworking people. And he's, you know, as wealthy as he became, he still, you know, held a lot of those values that his parents instilled in him. Did you find that the same thing with your parents coming in from India, that it was kind of different from some of the other people that were in your class growing up?
Yeah, I honestly had never really thought of it that way. But I do feel like my parents had incredible courage in leaving everything and coming here and building, you know,
right.
You know, their kids can have a successful life.
Right. You know? So, think about what you did too. I mean, you were in school and you had to have a lot of courage to leave college and take a chance in real estate. And then you had to have a lot of courage to transition from single family into multifamily. And, you know, whether you know it or not, maybe that, you know, upbringing helped kind of provide the strength and courage to push past that, you know, that fear that most people have in taking a chance.
Yeah, I think fear is definitely there in every aspect, whether you're flipping a house, whether you're coming to America from a different country, where they're buying an apartment complex. But I think really understanding why you're doing it is important, and having the right role models and people you look up to. Like, for example, Sam Zell, love that guy. He's right. Literally the godfather of multifamily. Like, the deals we're buying that are, you know, 70s and 80s product, he was building them back then. Like, that's how long he's been in the business. So looking up to guys like that from afar and, you know, people you partner with definitely helps in making your dreams and your goals seem more achievable, because you're just around it a lot.
Right.
I think that's important.
The other thing I found, so I've only been in the real estate business for a little over 2 years, two and a half years. But what I found is, for one reason or another, the real estate business seems to be, there's just a lot of sharing. There's a lot of, you know, people sharing information and trying to help the next guy. And people look at it you know, there's just a very abundance mindset in this industry, and it's not easy by any means, but you know, a lot of other industries, kind of the top people tend to like not want to share with the next guy because they want to stay on top, right? Where in real estate, it just seems to me, at least my experience has been, that the senior guys are very willing to share and help the first guy be successful. And who knows, they may end up partnering with them on another deal down the road. So keeping those relationships alive is very important.
Yeah, I agree. I think on the single family side, though, people keep things close to the chest. That's what I realized. But on the commercial real estate side, I've had very, very large sponsors. People own, you know, 15,000 plus units. Give me some really, really solid advice, you know. So I think it's definitely more open. Of course, there's going to be trade secrets and, you know, different things like that. But if you can just learn from other people and take their different processes and try to implement it on your own, I think that definitely helps.
Yeah, that's huge. So you mentioned it a few times. You know, you mentioned your faith. Talk to me about your faith and what role that's played in your life and some of those major decisions, those crossroads you had, and you know how you look at your business, you know, going forward.
Yeah, I think faith is one of the most important things in my life. There's been a lot of, so I come from a Christian background and born and raised Christian. So people are always surprised, like, you're Indian, you're Christian, but yes, we do exist. So
that's funny.
So I think our family has been Christian for many generations now. And faith has been a huge part of my life, especially this past few years of breaking those limiting beliefs and stuff. Because when we're here on earth, there's only so much time we have, right? I've had a lot of friends that have passed away at an early age. I realized, like, we only have a limited amount of time. And what we do here on earth is to serve God. And he's given us special skill sets and whatnot. He's created everyone in such a unique way. And faith is a huge part of my business. I would not be where I'm at today without my faith at all. So that plays a critical role in my life. Like, I always pray about deals and, you know, partnerships and different things like that. And I allow God to guide me in the right way and him to equip me into doing what I need to do to continue serving.
That's awesome. That's awesome. You know, I feel the same way. I'm also a Christian, and I try to start the day out every morning. One of my daily habits is to read one chapter of the Bible and then pray. And then just in the last like month and a half, I've been starting to actually journal, just basically talking to God on paper. But, you know, there's definitely been times when crossroads in my life where I kind of wanted one thing and it didn't happen, right? And then all of a sudden you look back and I'm like, thank God it didn't, right? just recently I was, you know, right before COVID crisis, I was runner up on a deal, and I still think that's a good deal, but it would have been a really stressful time, you know, doing an equity raise right in the middle of COVID. And so I kind of looked upstairs and said, you know what, God, you knew better than I did. And, you know, there'll be another good deal coming down the pike. So, yeah, I think it also gives us, you know, some peace during, you know, troubled times. To your point, you know, we're only here for a certain period of time. And that's one of the things I love about this multifamily business, too, is that, you know, it's not just about, you know, you and, you know, making money for yourself, but in these syndications, you know, you're bringing on a bunch of limited partners and you're helping to grow the wealth of, you know, all those other families. So that's a really neat part of this business as well.
I love that part as well, because obviously you're, as a sponsor, you're doing it to build wealth for yourself, and you're also helping others. You're limited partners or passive investors, you're infusing in capital, you know, let's just say $1 million on a 200 unit deal. You're making it a safe, cleaner place to live, putting playgrounds and upgrading interiors, redoing the outside, and you're creating a community. So I think the community building aspect is really cool.
Yeah. So community building and relationship building, and the relationships are, you know, relationships with, you talked about, you know, developing relationships with senior syndicators to partner with on the GP side. Then there's the relationships with all the, you know, limited partners, and a lot of the limited partners, you know, they have other responsibilities. They're business owners, and they're pulling aside capital, and instead of putting it in the stock market, they're investing in a large scale multifamily, or they may be retired and have shifted a bunch of funds to go into real estate. But you know, they worked hard for their money, so they want to make sure that they're partnering with somebody that they trust. And it's pretty amazing that you, at such an early age, you know, have been able to develop that trust with the people that typically invest in these deals. You know, they're 30s, 40s, 50s, 60s, because that's when you start building up the capital. So for you being in your 20s, that's pretty impressive. Why do you think that people trust you at such an early age?
I think it's being a steward to people's money, right? Like, you really have to think, when people are investing, you know, 75, 100,000, whatever the amount is, that's money that they saved up and that they're trusting you with. So I don't think age has that much of a limiting belief for me personally. I think for a lot of younger guys, it could.
Right.
One thing I learned is, like, as long as you have very strong skill sets, people don't really care your age, you know? So that's something I think.
I completely agree, but you hit on the big topic there is for the young people. I think there's a lot of young people that I talk to that feel that they have a limiting belief. They feel like, you know, what value could they bring to the table? Right. And they talk themselves out of being able to do it, you know?
Yeah.
And that's why I love your story, because you were able to overcome that. And, you know, you were able to look at your strengths and marry that up with the strengths of other GPs and develop those relationships both on the GP and on the limited partner side. And it's been extremely impressive to watch.
Yeah, I think, you know, I'll give some advice for young people wanting to get started in the industry. So let's just say you're like me 5 years ago and you just dropped out of college, or you just finished your finance degree. Here's how I would do it if I were to start all over again. After college or whenever, right? Even when you're 18, just out of high school, find a job at a commercial real estate brokerage, right? You know, all the big shops here, right? Become an analyst, then get into the investment sales side. So you're learning your skill sets as an underwriting. When you become an investment sales guy, you get to know more about deals and deal flow and build relationships with owners, right? And then you start making some deals done, right? Make some sales. Use that capital and start investing it with people you want to partner with. If you want to be a GP, if not, like, you know, whoever you want to do business with on the brokerage side. And then, you know, from there, you can start sourcing these deals and whatnot. And then you can start doing your own deals. So I feel like that's a really, really solid path. And want to, you know, continue to grow and learn, because being a GP, first time GP is definitely hard. If you have the right partners, it definitely helps. Right.
So I would go one step further and say that it, you know, who knows what will happen after COVID, but, you know, coming up to COVID, you know, in the Dallas market for sure, but I've talked to syndicators all across the country, and in all of the attractive markets in the big multifamily, you know, space, I don't believe you can win a deal as a first time sponsor unless you way overpay, because, you know, there's 15 offers on every deal, you know, six go into best and final, and then there's going to be three offers that are pretty close together, right? And then the seller and the broker are going to get together and the seller's going to say, who should I go with? And the broker is going to pick, you know, the buying group that has experience and that they're confident is going to close. You know, the broker wants his commission and he also wants to look good in front of the seller. He doesn't want the deal to blow up. So, up to now, I would say that it's clear near impossible, but you correct me if you think I'm wrong.
I think it just depends on which market you're in, right? So I live here in Dallas. Embarrassing to say, but I don't own any deals here in Dallas. I own in Atlanta and San Antonio. So across those two markets, 572 units. But Dallas also is, it's very competitive. I mean, you're not only competing with, you know, other sponsors like our size, right? You're competing with bigger guys, you know? So Dallas is definitely a place I would love to own in, but I think starting off in another market that's less competitive or finding someone who has deals here in Dallas.
Even the Atlanta deals though, didn't you, I think you said that you partnered with the folks at Disrupt Equity. So you partnered with senior people to get those deals done. You didn't, you know.
Exactly.
Okay.
So like any market I want to be in, I would love to partner with someone who already has the experience or expertise there. So I partner with Disrupt because they already had deals in Atlanta, right? And then San Antonio as well. Like they had they already owned one asset there and this one was down the road. So I think that definitely helps as far as breaking into markets. But once you have a few deals under your belt, as long as you can build the right relationship with the broker and you have a track record in closing, right, it'll help. But Dallas is definitely competitive. And also the underwriting is so much different. Like we're buying deals in the 60s a door in those markets. And here in Dallas is probably close to 100 a door now. So.
Yep. Different worlds. But so help us understand, you know, one of the challenges that came up in one of your deals and how you overcame that.
Challenges. I would say there's a lot of different challenges. Every deal is so different. But I guess doing your first deal, maybe it can just, you know, tailor to doing your first deal. It's really scary the first time. You know what I mean?
Which part?
I mean, just like whenever you're raising money and all that. Right. I think the other stuff is pretty easy, right? Even finding the deal, negotiating, all that kind of stuff. But like deal to the finish line.
When people have asked me that, I said that every step was scary until you did it. Like, you know, underwriting. I didn't know how to underwrite the deals, right? But then once you do it, it's not scary anymore. You know, going out and meeting with brokers. Once you do it, it's not scary anymore. But the first time, you know, even somebody going to a meetup for the first time, they could be scared. You know, they don't know anybody. But you know, once you go to one, then you're like, oh, I get this. You know, people are nice, they're friendly, they share information. But then, yeah, the scariest part is probably, you know, getting under contract and then having to raise the capital. And you think you have plenty of people that, you know, have told you that they want to invest, but are they going to step up and invest?
Yeah. So, I mean, there's many different challenges in doing your first deal. I think first thing is having some self-doubt. Hey, do I bring enough to the table, right? If it's your very, very first deal. But just having confidence in your skill sets is really important. And I mean, there's a lot of different challenges that happen in multifamily. But I think if you have the right team and you have people you partnered with that are experienced, that helps a lot. If everyone on the team it's their first time doing a deal, no matter what mentorship program, no matter all that kind of stuff, it's still going to be very hard. So having someone who has operational experience, that's key.
Yeah, I completely agree. So I ended up partnering with Gentleman, Raj Gupta. I think you know Raj. He's out of Chicago. Perfect. Super smart guy, very experienced. And, you know, he's got a funny way. You know, I pretty much run the day-to-day operations, but any of the major decisions, you know, I could go to Raj and explain, hey, here's what I think we should do. And most of the time he'll say, yeah, Darren, run with it. And every now and then he goes, you may want to consider this. And I think back and I'm like, you know what? That's a good idea. And so that's the power of partnering with somebody that kind of has been there, done that, right? And one, I appreciate his approach where he's not like saying, you know, Darren, that's a dumb idea. You should do it this way. But he's like my board of directors where he's not going to let us make a rookie mistake, you know? So that it's key to have experienced people on your team for sure.
Exactly. Yeah, I think that's absolutely critical.
Hey, so when you were talking about the path for somebody getting their first deal, I really like that path that you came up with. What's your thought on, you know, multifamily mentorship groups and participating in one, not participating in one, free meetups? Like what's your thought about? You didn't mention that in your kind of framework, so I wanted to get your sense on that.
Yeah, I mean, I think those mentorship programs are great. I do think they can help. But I think after a certain point, you really can't scale past it. You know what I mean?
Right.
There's a lot that have restrictions and whatnot. So just do your homework and which one you're getting into. Learn as much as you can and then, you know, hopefully continue to grow. I honestly haven't seen anyone in a mentorship group scale to 10,000 units.
No,
not even 5,000 units.
Right. I agree.
Like, GP, like vertically integrated, all that, like not like the code GP stuff, like where they're their own like group, like the Darren group. And
right.
You know, you have like 8,000 units and you have Darren construction and management and stuff. I just haven't seen that in a mentorship group. I think mentorship groups are great to meet people, get started, find passive investors. But scaling past that, there's a lot of bigger players out there. Another advice I would give to someone getting started, let's just say you have a finance degree and you're 22 and you have an MBA or whatever it is, right? Try to go and work for a sponsor that has at least 5 to 10,000 units. They'll have enough cash flow from asset management fees and all that kind of stuff and other businesses to be able to pay you like a salary and stuff, you know? So that's one advice, but that's a very, very, very high barrier to entry. But if right. you can do that, that's, you can skip all the other steps I said, right? You know, the brokerage thing and then all that, even the mentorship program, you can learn from someone who's actually operating deals at a, and in different markets, right? So that's another path I wish I would have taken or had that opportunity back when I was, you know, getting started.
Yeah, those are all good points. For me, the value of being in the mentorship group was quickly meeting a lot of other like-minded people and other people that, you know, were successful in 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 deals. But like,
yeah,
like,
exactly.
like you mentioned, there's not a lot of, you know, examples that are still within those groups that are 5,000, 10,000, 15,000 units. It seems like it's a place to develop and then, you know, possibly go on your own way. So,
yeah, I think the mentorship programs are great, but just do your homework on each one. Like, talk to people who have experience in each one and then make a decision. Like, I wasn't part of any mentoring program. You know, I've done 3 deals already. So, but I think.
But you put yourself out there and you went to a lot of the multifamily events and developed
relationships. Yeah, and conferences and all that. And,
yeah. So
I think it's definitely crucial in going and understanding and whatnot. But I think, you know, there's lots of ways to network. besides just being in one group. That's the point I'm trying to come across.
Absolutely. I agree with you there. So we talked a little bit about fear before. You know, when you are fearful of taking a certain step that you haven't done before, how does Ronnie, you know, push past that? What, you know, what steps or mental thoughts do you go through to get yourself to take action when, you know, the result is uncertain?
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of ways in handling fear, right? Especially when you're getting started or starting something new or whatnot. For me, my faith has been critical in moving past my fear. You know, I think praying and having the right people around you really helps. Having good counsel, good people you can talk to, having the right partners on deals, I think that has really helped me in surpassing the fear.
Those are all great points. So what's next for Ronnie? You've already conquered the, you know, large scale multifamily. You know, what's next?
What's next for me? I want to continue growing Kingly Acquisitions. So I want to have $1 billion in assets under management by the time I'm 30. So that's 3.5 years from now.
$1 billion in assets under management.
At least 10,000 units. That's my goal. And if you have the right partners, I think you could you can get there. And having the right counsel, so be fully vertically integrated. And I really want to go the fund route, so raising a fund, right? Let's just say $1 billion equity fund. I would love to do something like that. Get on the more private equity M&A space. I think that's where I've always wanted to be, like Blackstone. Like that's my goal. Like multifamily is just a stepping stone for me.
That's awesome. That is awesome. You know, and some people will tell you you're crazy. And then you know what? I hope that we're talking here 3.5 years from now and you're saying, I told you I was going to do it. And here we are. And you're at $1 billion and now you're competing with BlackRock. That would be fantastic.
Or partnering with them.
Awesome, right. Either way. But you know what? What's so special about you, your story is that, man, you just keep breaking the limiting beliefs. You know, I mean, a lot of people would just be like, what you've done so far is just amazing, but you're already catapulting it to the next stratosphere. It's fantastic.
Yeah, I think it's just having, if you can find concrete examples of people you want to be like I literally have like a dream advisory board on my phone.
Who's on that board?
There's a lot of people. So for private equity, Steve Schwarzman with the Blackstone Group, yeah. David Rubenstein with Carlyle Group, all the guys like Leon Black, Robert Smith, Henry Kravis, Ray Dalio, Larry Fink. For multifamily operators, Sam Zell, Agrawal with Nithia Capital, Carlos Vaz, Conti, Scott Everett, S2 Capital. There's a lot of different guys I look up to, and because they've scaled, like I'm learning a lot for real estate development, Stephen Ross with Related Companies. So I just have like this list of people that I just look up to, watch interviews, have talked with them, have sat down with them personally. And I think that really, really helps because you have to know, like you can't hit a target you don't see, right?
Right. It's not just going to happen.
Finding concrete examples can definitely help. So there's, if anyone's interested in, you know, seeing this dream advisory board, just have them reach out to me. Be happy to share it.
Sounds good. That was something new that I learned, and I'm excited. I'm excited to watch it happen.
Have you read Think and Grow Rich? There's like a
love that book. Love that book.
There's like a principle, like the mastermind principle, and you kind of talk to your mentors, like in your mind type of thing, or even reach out to them. Right. So I think having like the power of a mastermind or like an advisory board or people you can talk to who are on different levels, right? Like have a mentor or someone you know at 1500 units, and then those guys reach up to guys who have 5000 units, and those guys reach up. I always ask my mentors who are their mentors and who are they reaching out to go up.
That's a great question to ask for sure. Hey, so Ronnie, if there's somebody on the line that, you know, they, because I was in this camp, you know, a couple of years ago before I got involved in real estate, you know, any of the money that I put aside for investments was in the stock market. You know, it was either in ETFs or individual stocks or, you know, both after tax and all and retirement funds. You know, if we have people on the line that, you know, have not invested in real estate before, want to get involved in passive investing, help explain, you know, what do they have to go through and what's the best means for them to go down that path?
Yeah, I think to get started as a passive investor, definitely get educated, whether that's, you know, going to the meetups, going to the conferences. If you're here in Dallas, you're pretty lucky because all the conferences happen here. So going and meeting sponsors, people who are doing deals, and sitting down with them, having lunch with them, Zoom meetings, calls, all that kind of stuff, and find sponsors where you want to, that have deals that are in the market you want to be in.
So you brought up a couple of things, you know, so for some people, you know, for people in the real estate world, you know, using the app Meetup and looking for local meetup groups is, you know, very commonplace. For somebody that, you know, isn't in that world, they may not have ever used that app, you know, so it's just an app on your phone called Meetup, M-E-E-T-U-P. And you could put in apartment investing or multifamily investing and then look for meetup groups, and they're free meetup groups in your local market. And then to Ronnie's point, you know, you go there and you try to meet as many people there as possible. And when you meet other sponsors, you know, indicate that you have an interest in possibly investing passively, and then exchange business cards. And then from there, that sponsor will then reach out to you next time they have a deal. And you want to get on as many people's list as you can and look at as many deals as you can. And they'll typically come out with a webinar that will describe the deal. And even if you're not ready to invest in that deal yet, you know, attend that webinar. So, you know, it's just another learning point. And you know, that was the first thing that Ronnie said was get educated. And that's one way to do it.
Yeah. And I think definitely getting to know your sponsors and building a solid relationship with them before you invest is critical. So sit down with them, get to know them, get to know their business plan,
and that
partnering with,
and that's foreign to a lot of people too. I mean, like, look, when you buy a stock, right? You just go onto your brokerage, you know, website and buy the stock. You don't get access to the executives, but in these private placement deals, you do get access to the sponsors, the people that are putting the deals together. So to Ronnie's point, you know, get together with them at, you know, at the coffee shop, at Starbucks, or go grab lunch with them and really get to know them and see if it's somebody that you want to do business with.
Exactly. And you want to build a solid relationship with them because you'll be investing in their deals for a few years. You know what I mean? So it's important to have a solid relationship.
Well, Ronnie, that was a lot. I really appreciate you coming on the show. If somebody wants to reach out to you, what's the best way for them to get in touch with you?
Any social media, you can just search Ronnie Phillip. Connect with me on LinkedIn, Instagram, Facebook. That's probably the best way.
Fantastic. Well, I will also include some information on the show notes, and really appreciate having on board you young listeners. You have no excuse. If you want to do this, Ronnie is the example. So learn from him and go and take action. So until next week, listeners, have a great week, and we are signing off. Thanks, Ronnie.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to Darren Batchelder's Real Estate Investing Show at darrenbatchelder.com. If you liked the episode, please provide us with a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts or your podcast platform of choice. If you already provided us with a 5-star review, then thank you, and please share the show with a friend.